Well, when it was legal and growing everywhere, you could buy it for pennies per pound. When it was illegal and grown in secret gardens, you could buy it for thousands of dollars per pound. Now that it is kinda sorta legal, we simply must ask, should we grow our own medical marijuana?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 915th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Sasebo who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Ricochet on the board. So, hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Also, producer Kelly Bayer on the stories. Hello, Kelly.
Hello, Michael.
Folks, listen to Herodotus describe some Scythians sitting around a campfire way back there about A.D. or B.C., 500, some time ago. They sit around in a circle, and by inhaling the fruit that has been thrown on, they become intoxicated by the odor, just as the Greeks do by wine. And the more fruit is thrown on, the more intoxicated they become, until they rise up and dance and betake themselves to singing. For as long as we can see back, which is, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 years, we see that people have used cannabis as a means to soothe their way through life. Of course, people also use cannabis to make clothes for their bodies, paper for their books, sails for their ships, oil for their cooking, and rope to hold their things together, to name but a few. Because cannabis was so useful, it became a principal crop of mankind, with tens of thousands of acres being grown throughout the world. Cannabis was so plentiful, in fact, that one could harvest hundreds of pounds free from the roadside ditches of America's heartland. In the 1930s, however, the soothing properties of cannabis came to the attention of the powers that be, and they threw the cloak of prohibition over cannabis. This prohibition, ironically enough, ended the cultivation of cannabis for all purposes but that for which it was prohibited, and thus increased its value to thousands of dollars per pound. Today, the soothing properties of cannabis are claimed to be medicinal, and people now demand from the powers that be the right to grow and consume their own medicine. This demand leads us to ask, should we just grow our own medical marijuana? And who better to ask than the man who wrote the book, Dave DeWitt, who is the author of Growing Medical Marijuana Securely and Legally. Dave, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good to meet you, Michael.
So you're like a food historian. You've written 40 books. You're known as Mr. Hot and Spicy. Well, goodness sakes, have you ever... I'm sure you've looked back at as you were writing Growing Medical Marijuana, I'm sure you thought back over the history of mankind, 10,000 years. Have you ever seen anything so bizarre as reefer madness?
No, that was pretty bizarre. As a matter of fact, I did the national radio commercials for the re-release of Reefer Madness, and that was a fun trip. It was back in the 70s when they re-released that absurd movie, and I did the commercials initially for the Biograph Theater in Richmond, Virginia. We were running it at midnight, and we ran it at midnight Saturday nights for 26 consecutive weeks and sold out like 300 seats every single time.
It was, and of course, there wasn't one straight person in the audience for every...
Of course not.
Yeah, so... But have you ever... I mean, as a food historian, is there anything else that compares with reefer madness in the history of mankind?
Oh, you know, there's always been some prohibited substance somewhere. I mean, the whole industry of smuggling, the largest Sure. industry in the world, is all about prohibition. It's all about things that are banned or taxed or whatever, and people trying to avoid those kinds of prohibitions. So I've seen it, but not quite to the absurdity that we have it here in the United States, because it was just totally absurd to begin with. I mean, here, alcohol, which kills thousands of people every year, is legal. Tobacco, which kills more thousands of people every year, is legal. And numerous, of course, by prescription only, but numerous opiates are available, and they're legal with a prescription. Yet marijuana is classified as a class one narcotic, along yes. with opium and cocaine and all the
right
the
up there with
dangerous.
Atom bombs, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just you know, you want to go smack somebody in the face and say, "Have you ever read about anybody dying from marijuana?"
Yeah.
It has never happened, except maybe as a result of somebody being too stoned to drive or something
but,
like that.
You know, we end up with a situation where it's so funny because, you know, the government puts out a Reefer Madness movie to scare everybody into thinking this is a real terrible thing, and then what actually they prohibit marijuana. Thus, you know, eliminating all of its other uses and focusing its only use on that as an intoxicant. And you end up in a theater in which the government's own propaganda movie as is being played as a spoof to an audience of stone people. It's just mind-boggling how silly it all has become.
Yeah, and now we're going the full thing back with at least two states legalizing marijuana for recreational use, namely Colorado and Washington, and they're going to tax it, and they should tax it. In Washington State, all the deserted ABC stores or alcoholic beverage control stores that sat vacant for all those years are going to be turned into marijuana dispensaries. And further increase, you know, the revenues of at least two states in the union
yeah.
anyway.
So I have a confession, Dave. Back then when I worked at NBC Television, I helped produce a documentary called Homegrown. And in the course of that, I talked my way into 26 marijuana gardens from Seattle to Santa Barbara. But through it all, I've never had the occasion to consume medical marijuana. And so I'm wondering just how on earth does medical marijuana medicate our bodies?
Well, it relieves pain for one thing, and some people say it's not an actual pain relief. It's just like, I forgot where the pain is, kind of thing. And but the thing is, it doesn't matter how it works. If it works and people believe it works, it's... You know,
sure. It could be the world's best placebo, and if that's
right.
the case, fine. Right? Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, placebos have a definite effect. If people believe some medication is going to work, their brain will make it work mm-hmm. in a lot of cases. And so it doesn't really matter whether marijuana actually relieves pain or relieves pain by thinking it relieves pain. Pain is all in the brain. I mean, when you cut yourself and you feel pain in your arm, you're really feeling it in your brain because of, you know, substance P transmitted to your brain. So if you can interrupt that, and that's what, of course, capsaicin, the active ingredient in chili pepper, does. If it's used topically, it interrupts the transmission of the pain signals, like from arthritis, to the brain. It disrupts. It depletes substance P in the nerve endings. And so that's another way. Does it actually work in the same way that a topical anesthetic would work? No. But if it relieves pain, what difference does it make what the mechanism of the pain relief is? I mean, they're splitting hairs to try to tell you that it doesn't work the same way as opiates. Well, marijuana will kill you like opiate overdose will kill you.
Right. Well, Dave, you know, you're, like I said, an author of 40 books. I think we last worked together when we talked about your founding Foodies way back when.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I'm curious about you and how you made the transition from, like, hot and spicy and founding Foodies and chili pepper to growing medical marijuana. What was it about this whole thing that drew you in, like it draws everybody else in?
Well, it was money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had an idea that I would demystify the whole thing and not produce a 550-page dense book overcomplicating the entire subject of growing a weed. I would just show people who wanted to grow a little bit at home how to do it easily, affordably, safely, and I thought it might make some money. So, you know, query to my agent. My agent liked it. He took it to publishers. They bought it. And I've made a significant amount of money on it. That's what I do. I'm a professional writer. I write for money.
There it is.
I have to be interested in what I'm writing about. I could not write a book on knitting. I don't know anything about knitting. I don't care about knitting. I'm not disparaging knitting. Everybody needs to knit, I guess. But I couldn't write a book about that because I'm not interested in that.
Well, I think we're going to have some fun today talking about growing medical marijuana safely and securely, because Lordy knows there have been a lot of people who have been growing marijuana, but now it's medical and it's safe and it's legal. Oh my goodness, this is going to be fun. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking with Dave DeWitt, author of Growing Medical Marijuana Securely and Legally. And the question we have on the table today is, should we grow our own medical marijuana? 831-479-1080 is the phone number today. We will be right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, rejoice, America. It's finally, after all these years, legal. At least kind of, sort of. Well, it is in some places, but not in others. Well, maybe not in any place. I'm not sure. How does it all work? This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, we're talking with Dave DeWitt, author of Growing Medical Marijuana. Well, Dave, is it legal? I mean, let's start with the top of the federal government. Is growing marijuana, medical marijuana, legal with the federal government?
No.
It's
still classified as a Class 1 narcotic, which means it is a felony to grow marijuana in the United States according to federal statute.
And that's, however, we are, the United States federal government, I believe, is signatory to a single convention treaty, right, with respect to all of this marijuana business, which kind of takes it out of the federal government's hands, does it not?
Well, I guess it sort of does if you believe that international law transcends United States law, which, of course, the United States does not believe for one second.
Good. Fair enough.
I mean, they sign agreements, but who knows whether they live up to them or not or change them or whatever. I don't think that really matters much in the overall view of it. I mean, it's a states' rights issue. Now, when the states start making money off of taxation of medical marijuana, if the feds try to interfere with the states' rights to tax things, there's going to be a big brouhaha. I mean, it's going to be, I don't think they're going to go there.
Okay.
I mean,
but it is illegal at the federal level. That's
it is.
That's where we start. Okay. Now let's, I guess, go down to the question whether it's to the state level. Now, as I understand it, it's legal in some states, 18 states plus the District of Columbia, to grow medical marijuana.
Right.
But not the other kind of marijuana?
Are you talking about just marijuana for recreation, or are you talking about hemp, or what particular
variety?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Okay, well,
First of all, what is the difference between medical marijuana and marijuana, and hemp marijuana, and all the rest of the marijuanas? Is there a difference?
Yes. Hemp was bred to have no psychoactive or very, very few psychoactive chemicals in it. It was specifically bred, like flax would be bred, to make clothing. It was a fiber. Mm-hmm. It was bred for its fiber usage. And, of course, the U.S. Would not have become master of the seas without the use of hemp rope before Sisal, even, and before, of course, synthetic ropes and lines. Aboard ship, you would say a line, not a rope. But, you know, the reason that the industry boomed in the Northeast and New England and so forth because it was the availability of the lines for their riggings.
Mm-hmm.
And that came from hemp, a specific variety, not grown to get high, but grown to get people blown away across the seas. That kind
of thing. You would call that cultural selection then, right?
I guess you would.
You kind of take a plant called cannabis and you say, I want you to do this, and you start selecting for those among the plants that best do that. And with respect to hemp, it would be the ones that grow very, very, very tall and sparse.
Right. And are not so much. You want vegetative growth. You do not want flowering to interfere with the vegetative growth.
Right.
So, of course, when the nights get longer, the days get shorter, marijuana is going to flower, whether it's hemp or whatever. But in this particular case, you wanted to have as much vegetative growth as you could, especially in the stems where the fibers are.
Right.
Fibers are not really in the leaves that much. They're stripped away from the stems for hemp. And, of course, hemp was a huge industry in the United States. Both George Washington and Thomas Jefferson had hemp on their plantations, and it was a cash crop.
All the way up through World War II, I believe.
Yes, and that all ended, of course, when everybody got a bug up their ear that, you know, there was somehow hemp was going to, you know, poison people or get them high or something like that, when you would have to probably smoke three whole plants to even get a buzz.
Mm-hmm. So making cannabis illegal effectively restricted its cultivation to its intoxicating properties and away from its properties as a hemp fiber then.
Oh, yes, because in order to grow marijuana as a fiber, you need a farm, you need tractors, you need acres and acres and acres of material there to be able to do anything. And you can't grow hemp in your backyard. I mean, you can grow it, but you can't really do that much with it in your backyard because of the quantity that's required to even make a shirt. So, the farmers were out of business growing that, and I should tell you that I asked farmers down in Las Cruces at the New Mexico Chili Conference about this whole thing. When they saw it, I had a book on marijuana, that's all I wanted to talk about, and I said, well, would you guys grow hemp? They said, hell no, there's no money in growing hemp.
But, well, would there be any money in growing medical marijuana were it not illegal or severely restricted? I mean, if everybody could grow medical marijuana in their backyard, wouldn't their price go down to pennies a pound? Like, wouldn't it be as ubiquitous as like squash or something?
Well, that is already happening, and you're starting to see a glut of marijuana on the market. This is domestic marijuana rather than imported marijuana. You're starting to see a glut, and the prices are dropping quickly. Because so many people are growing it. And yes, there are restrictions about distribution of what you grow, and if you're growing it at home, it has to be for yourself, and you can only have so much. Whatever state you live in has another regulation, but I mean, you could have 6 plants, 8 plants, 10 plants, 12 plants, whatever the state tells you can have, but they don't regulate the size of the plants or the amount of dry material you're going to get from the plants or anything like that. But you can't have more than, say, an ounce of dried material. It doesn't make any sense. These regulations are silly.
Well,
I mean,
okay,
you're not going to prevent people from growing more and giving some to their friends or selling some to their friends.
So it's been an
underground economy for, you know, at least 60, 70 years in the United States. So, you know, it's even bigger than ever, but the prices are dropping.
Well, I wonder about that because California rejected a marijuana legalization effort initiative. And I, you know, didn't meet anybody who was for it, or especially those people up in Northern California who earn their living.
No,
by
they don't
it, so.
Want the, they don't want the state controlling it. They've had the federal government after them for ages. Why would they want the state to come after them?
Yeah.
I mean, And if they make it legal, that's what they knew what was going to happen. The prices are dropping.
Sure.
Now, I'm sure they're dropping in California, too, because of the medical marijuana that's grown in California.
Well, okay, so let's go back to this. We have a federal law against growing marijuana, and then we have state laws. We have two kinds of state laws now that allow for the production of cannabis. One is a legal or a medical marijuana bill. So there's 18 states that now allow for the production of medical marijuana. And there are two states that say ollie oxen free. You can grow it just to smoke it, which would make it recreational marijuana. So is there a difference in how you grow the two?
No.
No. So they're kind of the same thing.
Right. Well, they are the same plant. As long as they're not hemp, they're the same plant in the sense where there's three different species that you can grow and many hybrids and many what's called interspecific hybrids that the growers call varieties, but they're not true varieties. There's a fine line between medical use and recreational use, and it's so blurred as to be almost indistinct.
So one can safely say that when you smoke a lot of it or consume a lot of it, the line gets more indistinct as you go. It's kind of like those Scythians sitting around the campfire 500 BC throwing cannabis on the campfire. Things get kind of blurry after a while. And the more you throw on the fire, the blurry it gets. And pretty soon what you end up doing is standing up and singing, which is kind of what we're doing today here on the Food Chain Radio program.
Yeah, I guess we are, Michael.
Michael Olson with Dave DeWitt. We're talking about growing medical marijuana, having a little bit of fun along the way. When we come back, I'd like to go to the issue of the different kinds of marijuana with respect to their medical properties. There's cannabis sativa, there's cannabis indica, there's cannabis ruderalis, and there, of course, are the cannabinoids inside the cannabis that make us silly and make us well or medicate us. So that's what we're going to be talking about when we come back, and oops, there are people on the lines. 831-479-1080. You can join us as well. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Dave DeWitt, right back. Well, what about it out there? Should we, now that it's kind of sort of legal, grow our own medical marijuana? And hey, if we did, what kind would we want to grow? Would we want to grow cannabis sativa? Would we want to grow cannabis indica? Or that rare and exotic thing called cannabis ruderalis? I don't know. Let's ask Dave DeWitt, author of Growing Medical Marijuana. Dave, what should we grow?
Well, there are so many options now that it is rather unbelievable. In the book, I recommend options based on advice from growers, but that could be out of date at any time. At least they're popular varieties that are still being sold and so forth like that, but there's literally thousands of what the growers call varieties, and you'd have to keep up with some monthly magazine like High Times or something like mm-hmm. that to know what exactly is. But what's happening is stronger and stronger strains, and the same thing's happening with chili peppers, with the super hot chili peppers. I mean, people want the strongest, they want the biggest, they want the best, they want the most powerful. And so that is, of course, the trend. And although you do get more bang for your buck with these higher potency marijuana varieties, you can get pretty screwed up pretty quickly. And
well, you know, I know... To me, the kind of the difference is really, you know, we go back to that cultural selection, and we look at the cannabis sativas and the difference in the cannabis between them and cannabis indica, and you know, the cannabis indica kind of came, you know, out of the Middle East, and
right.
and enjoys a long tradition going back to the Hashishans.
Mm-hmm.
Of Hassan Isabah and the Crusades, and that cannabis indica is like getting hit over the head with a sledgehammer.
Well, it just has a different effect on the body because of the different blend of the various components, the chemical components that give a different kind of high. A lot of people say that if you smoke pure indica, which is a squattier, bushier plant that does not grow nearly as tall as sativa, that it's mostly a body thing. It's not like, I mean, it affects your body. You have a real good feeling about your body and waves of pleasure and that sort of thing, whereas they say sativa is more of a brain high, a clear thing. It has nothing much to do with the body. It's just affects your brain more than your physical sense and in your body. I'm not sure how much of that is just individual's interpretation or whether anybody's really scientifically studied these things. Most of the marijuana grown these days is a hybrid of either indica and sativa or of indica sativa and ruderalis. Ruderalis is a small plant that people would call ditchweed. It has no THC or active ingredients in it. It has one thing that they put the gene for. I'm not talking about you know, transplanting genes or GMOs or anything like that. I'm just talking about traditional breeding to put genes in there. And all it does is not triggered by the day-night cycle, as indica and sativa are triggered when the nights get long and the days get short. That's when they flower and turn into seed. But ruderalis is only flowers because of age. It gets to a certain age, a very young age, like 6 weeks or 2 months, and then it flowers. And so people like it because if it's blended with these other things, you can grow a very small plant that is not affected by the day-night cycle, and then when it's ready to flower, it'll flower quickly, you'll be done with it, and so forth. So it's good for indoor gardening, in closet situations, and that sort of thing, because it doesn't get 12 feet tall.
Right. So there we have this wonderful case of cultural selection, but do we know which would be the best for medical marijuana?
Oh, there's endless debates about that, and you know, I am not really an expert on the varieties and what's best for various conditions. I state that in the book. I'm not talking about, or I'm not promoting medical marijuana in the sense, and saying, oh, you should do this. I have some recommended varieties that are based on how they grow, not how efficacious they are.
Well, I always wondered that about that, Dave, because, you know, when people consume cannabis for, you know, they're undergoing, for example, chemotherapy or something, and the chemotherapy makes them so sick and whatnot, and then they consume the cannabis that that has really been bred for its delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the intoxicant. Maybe the other cannabinoids would be much better for medicinal purposes, you know, the cannabinoids that give you the munchies or something like that.
Well, there are breeders right now who are working on having marijuana that has less THC and more CBD, which they say is more healing than the actual THC. But in reality, the whole thing is such a blend of the different you know, chemicals involved in it. It's very difficult to say. It's just broad, and it's not specific. You don't give doses in milligrams like traditional medicine does. And it's a folk medicine.
And
you got to understand, although folk medicines do have, you know, medical properties, and that's why so many folk medicines, that's how penicillin got developed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a folk medicine, taking, you know, the various spores of penicillin, which is a mold. And somebody found out, oh, my gosh, this really works, and then they synthesized it, and that's what we use, you know, now. But many drugs have come from natural medicine or folk medicine or whatever.
Probably most of them, when it gets right down to it. Hey, let's go to the phones because I can't have you all for myself. I'm having so much fun here. But let's try Andy, and let's see what Andy has to say. Andy, welcome to the food chain.
It can only happen in Santa Cruz.
Oh, there you go.
I just heard the earlier talk about pain control and marijuana. First and foremost, you know, sometimes I work with hospice patients and severely chronically ill patients, and marijuana is a godsend for pain control and is an anti-nausea.
What kind?
You know, people have their different choices. There's one variety that they say is more of a sedative effect, more of a body high, which would control pain better. The other is clear. I talked to one woman who had lung cancer who preferred the kind of marijuana that didn't make her sleepy.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a big user of it myself. In fact, I have used it, certainly.
Did you use medical marijuana or recreational marijuana?
No, it's prescribed. I'm a chronic pain patient.
Oh, okay.
And if I can cut down the amount of methadone I take by 20 to 30 milligrams by smoking marijuana at night, I will.
So it actually works for you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It works for a lot of people for pain control. You know, when you have a narcotic, they don't understand why a narcotic works. Unlike lidocaine that scrambles a nerve impulse that makes something numb, narcotics somehow change the perception of pain. They never change the nerve impulse. So to say that marijuana is an ineffective pain control drug because they don't thoroughly understand it isn't really an accurate way of going about it. It controls pain.
Dave?
I completely agree with everything he's saying. That, in my experience, is what reality is. Everyone is different. Everybody uses marijuana differently, and it affects them differently. And I think that's true of a lot of different drugs. I mean, for example, I had a hip replacement, and the doctors were insistent that I take these opiates. And you've heard of all of them because, you know, they're big news for the illegal use, too. But my body doesn't like opiates. And so what do you think I was doing? I was taking ibuprofen and smoking marijuana. And it worked for me. I didn't have the pain. I resisted all the opiates and went through it fine. And now I walked 5 miles this morning. So, you know, it works for me in that particular sense. But if I have a headache, do I take medical marijuana? No. I just, you know, take an ibuprofen or an aspirin. That works fine for me. I don't necessarily need to get high to control my headache. But if I had some serious pain, I'm talking about serious pain, I would. I would do what was necessary to avoid opiates, just like Andy was saying a few minutes ago.
Well, right, there you go. Well, Andy, got a quick follow-up?
A marijuana doesn't cause the degree of respiratory depression as morphine. You know, morphine is a very toxic, very poisonous drug. And, I mean, marijuana is a much more safer drug to use.
Well, thank you very much. And, hey, listen, buddy, get well.
Okay, thanks. All right, bye.
All right, well, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. We're going to take a quick... There you go. And when we come back, we're going to continue a conversation about using marijuana and growing our own. Do stay tuned. 831-479-1080 is the phone number. Well, so much to talk about in so little time, so we better toss it right to Lisa. Lisa, what is your anecdotal story?
I fell down on the floor in my house after carrying babies on one side for a long time, and I couldn't move or walk for 12 hours till a family member found me. I crawled to the bathroom for 3 months. I went and saw an incredible chiropractor who has no knowledge of my marijuana use. His name is Tom Smith in Santa Cruz. He's incredible. Anyway, ultimately, he took an x-ray of me, and I saw it. The bottom vertebrae were fully... like a fist that meets at the bottom vertebrae, they were over. Like the whole thing was resting on nothing. So he helped me greatly, and he told me, you know, people might want surgery for you. I can fix this. And then at the end of it all, he told me, you know, no matter what, and I was using pot the whole time to do exercises and stuff, because when I smoked pot, I could do all that stuff. And he said, if you don't do these exercises and everything, I can't help you. And I just want to say that with Fukushima and everything, and the Emmeline told me also, you know, they wouldn't go on the record, smoke all the pot you can get. I've had every drug you can think of, and I'm the 1% who almost dies of it all. And Fukushima, it's an excellent detox. Marijuana is a goddess, and don't kill the male plant, because I bought it for years, marijuana. And eventually, when I started growing, I found out that my male plants were stonier than many I had paid $400 an ounce for of females. I don't know what this thing is about kill the men, kill the men, kill the men. But, you know,
well,
I listen to Alex Jones, and I want equality and beauty on this earth for everyone. Thank you.
Lisa, you're too much. Thank you for calling.
I am for myself. Do it. And hey, a big shout out who provides a platform and
thank
an app
you very much.
No
thank
murder
you
and
much.
Mayhem. Thank
right.
you.
So what was she talking about, David, about killing the males? There you are. David, what was she talking about with respect to killing the males?
Well, of course, they're just like with you know, many plants, there are male and female marijuana plants, unlike chili peppers, which have the both of the males and females on the same plant in the same flower structure. But in this particular case, much like mulberry trees, you need to have a female plant to produce seeds. And of course, if you kill the male plants, they're not going to have pollen to make seeds, should you be wanting to make seeds. But the big thing now is people say, well, seedless marijuana, namely Sensimilla, is more powerful, and it's not, doesn't have those damn seeds you got to pick out when you smoke it, and all that kind of stuff.
Don't you think?
However, you know, for most people who grow, they should have a source of male plant pollen if they're going to try to produce seeds.
Don't you think it's a wonderful irony, David, that for decades people would smuggle marijuana into the United States, containing millions and billions and trillions of seeds, and then for some reason all of a sudden Americans are growing their own.
Well, not only that, they're buying seeds, namely from England and the Netherlands, and paying up to $4 a seed, $10 a seed.
Wow.
And that is probably more absurd than anything, just
Dave,
to get a particular variety.
Dave DeWitt, the book is Growing Medical Marijuana, 10 Speed Press. Dave, thank you so much. Last time founding Foodies, this time Growing Medical Marijuana. There was a connection there. I know there is.
So.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live. Thank you.